My name is Liza Creel. I am an assistant professor at the University of Louisville, and I'll be presenting today on some of the work that we have been doing related to the 1115 Medicaid waiver that was approved and implemented in Texas over the last 4 to 5 years. I want to acknowledge a great team of universities and researchers and program people who have participated in the development and implementation of this evaluation, which is bigger than what I'm going to present over the next 20 minutes. Dr. Monica Wendell, who is in this room as the PI for this part of the evaluation and really the visionary behind what we did here. And then we have a number of other team members at Texas A&M and at the Texas Health and Human Services Commission. I have no financial relationships to disclose, and I want to acknowledge that this is funded through by the Texas Health and Human Services Commission and the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services through an agreement with a long number. Okay, so a little bit of background here about the 1115 Medicaid waiver. Do you mind if I put this there? Okay. So I want to just give you a little bit of background about the policy and the program in particular, because what we did in this part of our evaluation was actually ask people how they thought it worked. And so kind of understanding the implementation context is really useful here. So really the purpose of the waiver is to help Texas achieve the triple aim that we've all kind of read about over the last, say, 6 or 8 years. But really, the goal is to increase access to services, to increase quality of care, and to decrease cost over time. And the waiver program is designed to achieve these outcomes in a couple of different ways. So first, there's this delivery system reform incentive program, which I won't say again. I will refer to that as DSRIP. And this is a part of the program that allows performing providers, hospitals and health departments and other delivery organizations to actually try and transform the delivery system in their local community. Savings from that program are actually being used to shift the way that hospitals are paid for uncompensated care. We're not going to talk about that piece today, but you know, through this waiver program, the state itself actually shifted how hospitals were reimbursed under the upper payment limit model, and now through this uncompensated care pool of money. And then the state is also has been expanding Medicaid managed care across the state. It used to be just in one geographic location. Our research team is not evaluating that. The state Health and Human Services Commission evaluation team is evaluating Medicaid managed care. But in this survey that we are going to talk about today, we asked people about all three aspects of the program. We're going to focus mostly today our discussion on the delivery system transformation part, so the projects, the DSRIP piece that I talked about, and also how stakeholders felt about implementation of the program. So the state designed implementation around 20 different regions across the state. These are called regional healthcare partnerships. And they are made up of a number of different organizations. Some regional healthcare partnerships are big, some are really small. I mean that in terms of participants and also geography. So if we have 254 counties in Texas, some of the regions have 3 counties and some of the regions have well over 50. Those are more rural regions, but they're made up of all different types of organizations. Who serve in different roles. So they may be providing the local match, so county governments are participating in this. They may be the administrative agency, what we refer to as the anchor, who actually coordinates their RHP and really manages the activities and the reporting, not really the program activities, but the reporting and sort of the collaboration of organizations within the region. And then there are performing providers, and these are the organizations that are implementing those projects I mentioned. So there are tons of different types of projects. There are projects to reduce ER utilization. there are projects to co-locate mental health and physical health services, either in a physical health type office or in a mental health type office. We see it kind of both ways. So many different types of projects happening by many different types of providers. So there are hospitals, both public and private, community mental health centers, there are health departments participating here. So not kind of your typical health services delivery organization. There are medical districts, and then even physician practices. No, that slide did not transfer over very well. But as I mentioned, the Delivery System Reform Incentive Pool or program really focuses on system transformation. So the purpose of this program is really to change the way healthcare is delivered in the state of Texas using this waiver under Medicaid and Medicaid dollars to do this and test it and evaluate whether or not it's working. And, you know, it incentivizes providers to achieve specific outcomes, certain quality improvements that they measure over time, and then population-focused improvements. Okay, so getting now to our evaluation and the part of it where we really just wanted to understand from people participating in the program and from other stakeholders what they thought about how it was being implemented through these regional healthcare partnerships, and also what they thought the strengths and the challenges of the program were. And so that's what we will be talking about for the next few slides. I won't read those off to you. So to assess this, we actually deployed a web-based survey to over 6,500 individuals at different organizations across the state. We emailed this out to all different types of stakeholders. So we emailed it out to individuals from organizations that are participating in the program. So they're providing money, they're implementing a project, they're whatever they're doing, they're formally participating. We sent it out to, of course, Medicaid managed care organizations, state associations, advocacy groups who couldn't formally participate because they don't deliver services and they weren't eligible, but obviously have a vested interest in the outcomes of the programs for the populations for which they advocate. We also sent it out to other types of providers who were not eligible. So federally qualified health centers, for example, were not eligible to participate as a provider, but obviously have an interest in the underserved population and outcomes of this type of program. So we had the survey open for a couple of months in mid 2014. We had an 8% response rate, which is low, but well within the range, the reported range of web-based surveys in the literature. So now just to give you kind of a summary of stakeholder experience with their regional healthcare partnerships. So remember, there's this anchor entity that manages what's happening in a region. And so we asked people how they thought that was going. And in general, stakeholders were very positive about their anchor leadership, the communication that was occurring between the anchor and among other providers and organizations in their region. People felt that they were being heard and were involved in the process, both the development and the implementation process, that their community, we also asked about perceived impact, that their community needs were being addressed and collaboration was increasing. There's a separate part of this evaluation, which we presented on yesterday, that is actually measuring changes in collaboration. But here we just asked if they thought it was increasing collaboration among organizations. So here are a bunch of numbers and a bunch of ranges that I won't read off necessarily, but you can see here that there were, generally positive results. We asked these with Likert scale type responses, so if they agreed, if they sort of agreed, if they didn't agree at all, if they didn't know because they weren't in a position to really evaluate that or assess that. And you can see that there's quite a large range in some of these areas by RHP. So some regions were more satisfied than others. But as I'll talk about in a little bit, we had a pretty good response across all regions, but some of the response the number of responses in some regions were really small. So they're particularly vulnerable to extreme responses. But we do want to present ranges there to show that there is some variation. Here, people are overall very satisfied with kind of the impact of the program. So with their RHP's RHP's progress toward addressing community needs, part of the development process was really to assess community needs early on and propose and implement projects to address those gaps that were identified. People felt that they had an opportunity to participate, and they were heard. Again, 94% agreed that the RHP was increasing collaboration. We're actually seeing that that's true in numbers in another part of our work, and that it's beneficial for residents of their community. So they believe that it truly is making a difference for the people that they serve or that they represent. Okay, so that's kind of how that's an overview of some of the results of the implementation kind of design and process and how people felt about it. And then in another part of the survey, we actually asked people about kind of the strengths and weaknesses, opportunities and challenges of the program. And so what I'm going to present here is just this delivery system reform piece, so DSRIP, responses related to DSRIP. But basically, the top identified strengths of the program were that it provided resources to serve more patients. It gave people the opportunity to design innovative projects. This is an interesting one because we also see the exact opposite response in when we talk about weaknesses. So there's variation in perspective. The collaboration with other organizations was, or the ability or preference for collaboration with other organizations was also good, that it was increasing access to health services and programs, and that the program itself actually gave organizations and regions the opportunity for system reform. And we kind of asked people about those specific items and they ranked them, but then we also had some open-ended questions where people could tell us about other strengths, other weaknesses that they identified. And I will tell you, for a web-based survey, the amount of thought that that the respondents put into this was really incredible. We had planned on doing follow-up key informant interviews to really kind of dig deeper into some of the things we identified through the survey, and we really didn't have to do it. I mean, the participants in the survey really gave so much information to us and really spent a lot of time thinking through their responses, which was great. So some other strengths, we heard from people that they were generally satisfied with the state staff, who it's pretty amazing how they put this together in a very short time frame and started implementing with no planning year at all. The respondents felt positive about the Texas-wide scope, but also the regional implementation process, and really the conceptualization of DSRIP overall and the opportunity to be innovative. People were generally felt that, you know, a real strength of the program was the investment in healthcare, the opportunity for innovation. So here's a quote: "DSRIP has been an excellent way for the hospital to experiment with new programs and that would we otherwise would not be able to finance." Respondents felt like the program had improved access and patient care and also improved collaboration. Another quote: "We are very much enjoying the opportunity to collaborate and learn with more of our primary care partners. For the first time ever, we're at the table." This is a community mental health center representative. "For the first time ever, we are at the table with other healthcare providers and having an opportunity to discuss and design solutions between primary care and behavioral health." One of the things we're really interested in understanding is sort of the impact of this program on community mental health centers, who has seen an influx of resources through this program, and you know, are obviously seeing a lot of partnerships created through it. So top weaknesses that were identified by respondents, a lot of this is administrative burden. Early on, respondents felt that there were unclear expectations and a lot of changes that were happening as the regions and the providers were trying to implement the program. Again, here, as I mentioned earlier, people felt that there were actual limitations on the project options and the ability to innovate. Reporting, as always, a challenge and a burden on providers, and in some of the areas, they felt like the timeliness of funding and the distribution of resources was a weakness. So when we kind of did the qualitative follow-up here and asked people about those, when we analyzed this, we actually tied these weaknesses to stakeholder recommendations for improvement, and so that's how I will present them here. So the recommendations are really around implementation processes, measurement of and identification of outcomes, and then what we are calling sensitivity to context. So in implementation processes, there's a lot here. Stakeholders recommended minimizing changes, clearly defining expectations, simplifying rules and reporting, better planning around timelines, providing timely feedback, and that's from the state and CMS, providing timely feedback to providers, the ongoing changes in reporting, definitions, and expectations, though necessary, this is a quote, we're challenging at the local level for our staff. Stakeholders suggested providing a timely release of funds, involving new providers. Some people really felt like they should have been eligible to participate but weren't, and expressed that loudly in our survey. Expand the menu to facilitate innovation, while others thought that the opportunity for innovation was great. And improve communication and collaboration. So in outcome measures, category three is kind of irrelevant to this presentation, except that providers felt like the outcome measures that were identified could be improved to accommodate differences in providers and projects. Okay, I'm almost done. They don't always, a quote from a respondent, they don't always reflect our program or its benefits. They need to be better aligned. So this respondent says MHMR, which we're referring to as a community mental health center, and public health were forced to align projects to hospital-specific outcome measures. Additional outcome measures need to be included for different types of providers. So a lot of the outcome measures that could be used were very service delivery focused and not necessarily public health or population health focused, and some of the providers were challenged by that. And then reduce changes. That was a theme across all of these. And sensitivity to context. So one of the things we heard quite a bit was that the state and CMS really needed to recognize and accommodate rural urban differences. This came out a lot under administrative burden from the smaller hospitals who said, in rural areas, who said, yeah, you know, when you're a giant health system and you have a lot of administrative staff, this reporting isn't so bad. But for those of us that are small and we have one person working on this, the administrative burden is really intense. And then recognize and accommodate hospital differences, so kind of the same thing there. A few other insights. I have like 30 seconds. Respondents were concerned about sustainability. This is a five-year demonstration project. They're concerned that they're not going to be able to measure the outcomes they want to measure by the time the demonstration period is over, they weren't sure that they would, how this would be sustained after the funding was no longer there. Many respondents mentioned external factors, things that were happening related to Affordable Care Act and other policy interventions that were sort of occurring at the same time, and how that would affect outcomes for them. So a few study limitations. We had a low response rate, which I already mentioned. We distributed this survey at a time when the providers were had a lot of reporting requirements and other things going on, and so we think that probably influenced our response rate. And then we did have variable response rates across the RHPs. So this was a cross-sectional survey. We're not doing a follow-up on this. So we have reported these data to the state and to CMS. So it was included in some interim reporting that was done to them. But we've also heard from providers and from regions that they're really interested in these results and that they want to use it in sort of a formative process for improving implementation at the local level. And so we're preparing those reports as well. So thank you. Thank you.